well, today is November 2nd, 2019. This is Elaine Staub, and I am here interviewing Peggy Walton, who is a Peace Corps volunteer in the Ukraine in three different times, 1994 to 96, 2013 to 2014, and 2015 to 2016. She worked primarily in the education sector. So I'm very happy that she's here. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Great. We're just going to go ahead and get started with the questions. The most, what I wanted to start with was, what was your life like before joining the Peace Corps, which would have been before 1994?
Well, I was one of the members of the older people in our group. We were in group three in Ukraine. I was 48 when I went. I had been working in a community college as a program director, and those programs were then decentralized, and I became an English teacher. And that was okay with me because I had always enjoyed reading and thinking about grammar and things like that, but I also wanted an international experience, and I then had the marketable skills because I had to retrain as an English teacher. And I was divorced at that time, and my youngest son was just leaving high school, and so it was an opportune time. I had this window of opportunity where my parents were still alive who could help with the kids if need be, and the kids were sort of on launched. So it seemed as if it were an opportunity not to be ignored.
Very nice. And one of the most common questions is, why did you join the Peace Corps? I guess you had kind of said that, that you wanted an international experience. Can you elaborate a little more on why you decided to do the Peace Corps?
Well, I'd always wanted to do Peace Corps since I was little and JFK. Well, I wasn't so little when JFK came along, but he was an inspiration. And I was itchy to do it, but I got married instead. I had other developmental tasks that took precedence. And by the time I was divorced and the kids were old enough, I had what I saw as this opportunity to do it.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a specific country or project in mind?
No, when I went, you weren't able to really choose the country you wanted to. You could give a general region, but I was good for anything.
Mm-hmm. What was the process like then?
For application mm-hmm. process? It was huge. It was enormous. We didn't have internet particularly, and so it was all paper. It was enormous amount of paperwork and letters of reference, which I'm sure you still have to have. But anyway, it just seemed enormous. And let me see, what else do you mean about the process? I was interviewed. I completed the initial application. I was interviewed, then I had the medical exam, and then I was accepted, and I thought I was going to Yemen. And I thought, oh, that's good, because, you know, there aren't any amoebas or whatever in Yemen. They'd be all arid, you know. And then there was a civil war, and no one went to Yemen anymore. So the recruiter called me and asked me if I'd be interested in the former Soviet Union. And I said yes, so off I went to Ukraine.
What did your friends and family think about your decision, and how did you prepare?
They were surprised, and my parents were worried. My friends were supportive, but they were sort of like, why are you doing this? Yeah, my mother didn't want me to go. She thought I was going too far away, even though, I was 48 at that time. She was concerned about my safety. My dad was very supportive. My friends basically were, and my kids rolled their eyes and said, oh, do what you have to do, Mom. So, you know.
What was the training like when you got to the country?
Yeah, We were all in an institute outside of Kiev. This was right after three or four years after Ukraine had become independent. And so it was very Soviet still. And I mean, it was a far cry from Maryland. And this labor institute is where we lived and had the classes. And we were lucky if there was hot water. We didn't have internet, so we were, you know, all really removed from our homes. The training was done in part of the institute, you know, the classrooms, but half the classrooms didn't have any glass in the windows because it was so run down. It hadn't been used in a while. So when it rained, it was a little dicey. But this was in June, so it wasn't cold, fortunately. The training was done in Ukrainian. Our language was done in Ukrainian by native speakers, which was, you know, you just jump in and you have to start learning. And that was intense. The other training that we got from the Peace Corps, people in Ukraine, was done in English. We were separated into the people who, the volunteers who were in education, to those who were in business. There were only those two sectors in Ukraine at that time. And so we had two groups. And so we trained and did our language training together, I think, with those people in education. And it was very intense. And it was, as it's supposed to be, a weeding out process. So there were some people who left on their own. Some people, one person, I think, at the end of training was not asked to join. But most of us lived through it. You know, it was 3 months of intense learning, cultural, language, educational, you know, technical, I guess you'd call it, training. And then off we went to our sites.
Mm-hmm. And you were probably pretty prepared for the technical piece because you had all this experience coming
right
from working
right
in the States and education.
Right. So my placement in all three times I was in Ukraine was as an English teacher trainer. So I taught English teachers English. I wasn't in the classroom teaching young kids, you know, subject and verbs. Mm-hmm. And so the people that I was with were English teachers in secondary schools, mm-hmm. by and large. And their needs, they knew how to write, but they didn't know how to speak. They knew the grammar better than I did, but they didn't know have speaking practice. So that's what mm-hmm. they got from me.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I had great fun because I have a very eclectic background, and particularly in my first placement for those 2 years. Mm-hmm. I was in the recertification institutes, what they're called, where every 5 years English teachers rotate back to this institute for 3 weeks, and they live in the institute. So they take an array of different courses in Ukrainian history and language and English, and that was the one I taught, and I've forgotten the others. But so they were there for 3 weeks straight, and because, as I said, they knew how to read, they could read and they could write, but they couldn't speak. So I did a whole lot of fluency projects of, here's a map of Washington, D.C. How do you get from one A place to the other, for instance? How do you talk about values clarification? So it was sort of a melange of different types of skills. In one class, we did the Myers-Briggs type indicator and a very reduced, dissolved version of it. We did how to teach how to write a paragraph, for instance, paragraph writing in English, because the way Ukrainians construct their essays is very different than ours. So it tapped into my other skills as a counselor and also as an English teacher. So my bread and butter job in Dnipropetrovsk, now called Dnieper, was to teach these English teachers. But there was another volunteer who worked in the business, and Sean's employer wanted his employees to learn English. So I taught very elementary business conversational English to people who'd never studied it before in on-site in this business. And then I taught psychology and English to fifth-year university students at the University of Dnipropetrovsk who were studying psych in English. So I had the opportunity of teaching psychological theory and counseling theory to these university students.
Very interesting. And that was in your first 2 year?
Yeah.
Because I know you came back three times. Can you talk a little bit about the three different experiences you had in the three tours you served in the Peace Corps?
The first, the classic 2.5 years, 27 months, were in eastern Ukraine, over where the war is, it's in the war zone. It's very adjacent to the war zone now. Mm-hmm. So that was in eastern Ukraine, where people spoke mainly Russian. So my training was in Ukrainian, but my site placement people spoke Russian, so I changed over. And I was at that institute where I did these other things. The second time I came back was in 2013, because I really wanted to see how the country had changed, because it was so very destitute and down on its heels in 1994.
Because this was several years later. Would have been
96 to 2013.
Yeah.
So quite a difference.
Yeah.
And
15
I was
years or so.
Yeah. So in that placement, I was really lucky. Well, all of them, I was really lucky. The second placement, I was in the northwest, part of the country, about 80 miles from Poland in Lutz, and it's an old, sort of, old European-like city. Dnipropetrovsk was very Soviet, very Eastern, Stalin buildings, people spoke Russian, very Russian-leaning, ethnically Russian. In Lutz, they were very nationalistic, spoke Ukrainian only, did not want to speak Russian. I was in an institute there too, so I did basically the same job that I did in Dnipropetrovsk. I was teaching English teachers English.
Was it any different, though, than your experience?
I know, it was
15,
basically the same.
Years?
Yeah, you mean in terms of what I did?
Mm-hmm.
Not
anything
particularly.
Else?
No, it was the same. The teachers rotated in. They stayed for 3 weeks. We did, the same kinds of lessons.
Mm-hmm.
But the environment was so different, mm-hmm. being in western Ukraine and up near Poland. Then I was supposed to stay an entire academic year there. I arrived in August, and we were evacuated in February because of the political upheaval and the revolution.
Mm-hmm. And when were you evacuated? I'm sorry?
February of 2014.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We were all out, very quickly, very abruptly. So that year was abbreviated into about 6 or 7 months, maybe seven months. And that was difficult because we couldn't tell anybody that we were leaving, because the Peace Corps didn't want word to leak out that Americans were evacuating, because they thought something might happen to us.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very abrupt and left me very feeling a lot, very unresolved. So I went back again in 2015, like a year and a half later, to try to close things up for myself. But I went to Uzhgorod which was in the southwestern part near Romania and Hungary. So I had three very different experiences, although I was doing the same work in the same sort of institute.
Can you describe these places a little more? It's hard for me, having not been to the Ukraine, to understand them, and other people who are listening, they might. Can you describe what the places were like a little more?
Dnipropetrovsk is the third largest city in Ukraine, but it often was not on maps at all because it was an enclosed city. So people there had not seen Americans because that's where the Soviet missile factory was. It was all underground, and so nothing would show up on a map, but maps of Ukraine didn't have the city and like millions of people who lived there. But that shows you how important the importance of that city to the Soviet Republic and the fact that the rockets were built there. So there were a lot of people who were there still are lots of people who are very well educated in Dnipropetrovsk in terms of the sciences. But it made for my coming in there, or you know, those of us in Group 3 who were posted there, as real anomalies, because people weren't used to people not speaking their language very well, and they couldn't understand us because we had such a strong accent. Whereas here in the U.S., you were used to having people, immigrants, and who can't speak the language, you know, all that well sometimes, and we can, you know, give them some slack. But in in Dnipropetrovsk, people didn't want us to try to speak Russian out loud, you know, like in a group setting, because of our strong accents. And we were told on the trains, for instance, don't speak English and don't speak Russian because you sound so weird. So basically, be quiet, because there was a security issue for us.
Why was there a security issue?
Well, people hadn't seen too many Americans in the East, and they were afraid for our safety because there was some vestiges of the, you know, Cold War and all that. And in fact, the KGB came to the Institute to talk to the rector about me because I was suspicious. So Dnipropetrovsk is a huge, huge city with all kinds of different institutes, you know, like polytechnics and the university, and people are concerned about their education and are very professional. And when I went to Lutsk is a much smaller city. It's very old. Has medieval castle and things like that. And it's just a very lovely, small, old city with the castle and the cathedrals and people who are very traditional and very nationalistic. It was really interesting to be there when Ukraine was supposed to enter into negotiations to join the European Union. People would gather in the square, the city square, and listen to the speeches for, you know, entering the European Union, out in drenching rain with their blue umbrellas with the gold stars around them, covering them up in the rain, listening to these speeches. So when I was there, I was very optimistic that Ukraine would join the European Union. And the reason for the revolution was that Yanukovych, who was the president, backed out of it. And then people got really angry. And that ignited the Maidan and the revolution in Kiev. But right there, it was this sense of possibility in 2013, especially in the fall, over the Christmas, of possibility of change, of radical change, of becoming more westernized. And then the revolution, and now they're still working it out. When I was in Uzhgorod, the last time in 15 to 16, it's another very old city, but has much more of a cosmopolitan atmosphere, because it's across the river from Uzhgorod is a Slovak Republic and Slovenia. And so there's a lot of commerce and interchange with Western countries, and particularly from the south, in a little bit south of Uzhgorod into Hungary. In fact, people there a little bit south of Uzhgorod say they're Hungarian, even though they were born in Ukraine. So that's a little confusing. So, and they don't understand that, to me, you know, the difference between nationality and ethnicity, there's a difference, but to them they don't really get it. They don't buy into being Ukrainian because I'm Hungarian, my family speaks Hungarian. So there are all kinds of ethnic language issues on either, I guess, throughout Ukraine, but I could see them in the east where people said, I'm Russian, I want to speak Russian. And in southwestern Ukraine, okay, I'm born in Ukraine, but I'm Hungarian and I'm speaking Hungarian in our schools and at home. So how do you bring this country together with you don't speak even a common language? So I don't know where that leaves the country, but anyway.
Mm-hmm. So your job was to teach English,
right,
which is sort of the common, what could be the common language.
Right, but
it's an important language.
It's an important language for people who want to do business and who want to be members of the world, you know, and interact with people who are not Ukrainian. But bringing the country together without a common language, I think, is hard. And people say, oh, well, you have Canada, where you have the Quebecois who want to speak French. But Canada has a history of speaking English and French. And Ukraine is fragile. It doesn't have, it only has, you know, like maybe 30 years of independence. It doesn't have a real strong basis as a country.
Looking back at your tour of service, what do you think were your main accomplishments? You talked a lot about different things you did. What do you think your main accomplishments were?
I think that the English teachers in all three sites got, if they wanted to, some of them didn't, had lots of opportunity to practice their speaking skills. Some were very embarrassed the way they spoke and they didn't want to talk very much, but others really sort of grabbed that, you know, ring and went with it. And I think they got a lot out of novel ways of teaching, that they're used to a lecture type where you raise your hand like this, you know.
So very formalized.
Yeah, and rigid, yeah. And so they got the practice, the fluency, the proficiency, perhaps increased proficiency. They also got a taste of some what they would call non-traditional teaching strategies. A sort of inductive thinking, which they're not used to. They're used to top down, tell me what it is, tell me the answer. What is the right answer, Peggy? I said, well, there really isn't one. And they said, there has to be a right answer.
Getting them to think for themselves and...
Yes, independently. Because this is sort of interesting. When I would go into elementary schools in the East, first of all, the kids had never seen an American, so they peek around the corner, you know, like, you know, does she look like a monkey? How does she look? That was really funny. They also, where was my point? What were we talking about? Non-traditional teaching?
That's just so different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know what it was. So the kids would recite the same poems, sayings, Shakespearean sonnets. They all knew them cold. But they didn't know anything beyond what was script, what they were taught, what there was right here in, you know, the curriculum. They didn't know how to access anything else or know anything beyond what they were taught. And they weren't allowed, or they didn't have the materials, they didn't have resources, they didn't have textbooks. Everything is oral. So it was, they would sing the same songs. And it was, to me, just so rigid, so same. So you might say indoctrinated. Everybody knew what the curriculum, but they didn't know anything outside of the curriculum. Here in the United States, everybody, there's very little common core curriculum, and everybody knows all this other stuff. So it's a real difference from our educational setup. It's very centralized.
So how did your Peace Corps experience influence your plans in the future when you came back? You came back several times and then went back to the Ukraine again. How did that influence your plans and your career?
Well, that doesn't really apply to me because I was older. So that when I came back from in 1996, I had a leave of absence from my college, and I just went right back into teaching what I had been teaching before. So I just folded right back into what I had been doing before.
Which is teaching English?
I was teaching writing. I did some other things.
At the college level?
Yeah. Yeah. I did other things at the college, but that was my main job, was teaching.
Do you think your experience working in the Ukraine changed your teaching in any way?
A little bit more empathetic for people. I certainly, this isn't anything that really affected my teaching, but I certainly learned the value of hospitality and just openness of just, you're here, come in. I don't have to look right, I don't have to have made a perfect meal, just come. The main thing was just being welcoming and a little bit more tolerant, I'd say. And then when I went back the other times, I had already retired. So I didn't have to come back to a job per se.
Mm-hmm. One question they ask is, how have you, the three goals for the Peace Corps, I don't know if you're familiar with them, to provide technical assistance where requested, to promote better understanding of Americans, and to promote better understanding of other people by Americans. Can you talk maybe about the third one and how maybe you have done that in coming back?
Well, I don't know it's been anything very deliberate or pointed, but certainly my friends, all of them have said that they've learned a lot about Ukraine from me, and an awareness. They send me articles now about, especially now what's all in the news about Zelensky and Trump and everything. They're also aware of the country in a way that they weren't before.
So you've shed that light on them, talking about Ukraine and Ukrainian people. Have you, through the years now, it's now 2019, and I guess the last time you were there, you said, was 2016. So have you continued any kind of involvement now in there, or do you keep in touch with people, or have any other kind of continued involvement in Ukraine?
In Ukraine, I was just there this summer and went to visit my friends who were... who live in Lutz. We met in Lviv, which is another very western city in Ukraine. So they came down to Lviv to meet with me, and my counterpart from Uzhgorod came to Lviv to meet with me also. Then when I was in Kiev, I saw some of the Peace Corps staff people, one who was there in 1994 too, so that was pretty. Yeah, it's nice to see Jana. She gave me these earrings. That's why I'm wearing them for her today.
Very nice. And who was she?
She was like a program director.
Okay.
And she still is. So she, right now she's head of the response volunteers in Ukraine, in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. But she was a program director at that point. Help train the new volunteers, the newbies.
Okay. Interesting. So you've kept in touch with a lot of Ukrainian and Americans also working there still.
Also, when I was in Ukraine this summer, I saw my first, she wasn't my counterpart, but she was the person delegated to sort of like my house mother, you might say, Luba. And I've seen Luba a couple of times, actually. She came to the U.S. in 1997. Friends and I sponsored her to come for a visit. And then I saw her when I was back in 2013. And I saw her in 2015. And then I saw her again this summer. So I saw her family. And in fact, I was really, really flattered that her grandson, who's studying in Vienna, came home in big part to see me this summer, which was just really, I was really tickled. Anton's a sweetie.
That was
very nice of him, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think I already kind of asked this question, but I'm going to re-ask it again. What has been the effect of your Peace Corps service on your life in general? What are the biggest takeaways? And sort of as a last question, what do you feel like what effect
mm-hmm.
it has had
mm-hmm.
on you?
Mm-hmm. Well, 1994, I did have a computer, and I had one of those dot matrix printers that seems really crude. There was no internet, so I was really isolated in Dnipropetrovsk. I remember having a dream before I left that I was on a ship and I was leaving this safe harbor and I was going across this ocean, but I didn't know what the port of, you know, arrival was going to be. And I remember feeling, this is like a cult, because I had to leave my job, my family, my dog, my house, my car, my friends. Whoa, this is major. So I was feeling pretty uncertain when I left. And mail didn't arrive reliably at all. So I can remember going to the post office any number of times and leaving in tears because there was no letter, there was nothing from anybody, and I felt that I had been forgotten. Intellectually I knew I hadn't been, but I certainly felt that I had, and emotionally felt that way, because I was there, I mean, by myself, as I said, I was 48, 49, 50 when I got home. I was older than the 20, 22-year-olds who were there coping with all this. So if I were having trouble, think of what they had also gone through, because I hoped to think that I had more coping skills at an older age. So one of the biggest things I learned was how to tolerate solitude and how to entertain myself and keep myself balanced at times when it was really, really difficult, because we were so removed from what was familiar. And even though DP, Dnipropetrovsk, became familiar, not in a deep way that your home becomes familiar. We were always foreigners. So that has stuck with me. The loneliness, the absolute loneliness and emptiness of being, you know, sort of on your own. And in getting across town was not that easy, that we couldn't call very easily even, because the phones didn't work that well. And So the other thing I learned was, as I alluded to, was hospitality. So my place in DP became sort of the gathering place for many of the other volunteers. I think there were about 15 of us in the city, but I didn't see them because they were strewn all across, and they were, you know, anyway. But when they came, you know, into the center of the city where I was, they often just gathered at my place.
That's
and
nice.
We would have dinners and parties, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And that was, that helped. That helped everybody, I think.
Mm-hmm. That's very nice. Well, is there anything else you'd like to share?
Well, you know, the Peace Corps slogan is the toughest job you ever love, and it's absolutely true. I look back on those years as being really years where I thought that I was using the skills that I had in meaningful ways, and helping people to as a model, but also as a skill giver, teacher. That I hope people, the teachers in particular, you know, are using those skills.
All right. Well, it was very nice interviewing you today, Peggy. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.
And
thank you.
Very interesting to learn about the Ukraine and your three Peace Corps services there. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.